Also, Graham Talon is my next guest, David Parr, the last guest of the Tower. Does that intimidate you, David?
No.
You should be thrilled.
It's thrilling because I always wanted to do an interview in this fishbowl studio.
Well, David is, as I said, I don't make empty promises here. He's going to make us all disappear a little before 11. Bob Chirito is sitting in, too, because I just thought these two guys would be... it would be good for you two guys to meet.
Yeah.
Well... Meet David.
This will be fun. Hi, David.
Good to meet you.
Nice to meet
Bob,
you.
What do you know about magic? Anything much or anything or?
No, not. I mean,
you're not
just
a magician.
What I've seen on TV, David Blaine, and going back to Houdini, but I don't. I've never studied magic.
Do you watch Penn and Teller Fool Us?
I haven't watched them in years.
So. Okay, because I was on their TV show.
Oh, okay,
when?
Last season, and I won. I fooled them.
What was your?
I did a piece of card magic, and I had estimated my chances of fooling them at about 30%. And so I flew out there, and I did it. And
did they come to you and say,
yeah, they saw a video of this particular piece of magic, and they said, we want you to do this on the show.
Wow. And so they flew you out.
So that was the producers. It's kept secret from Penn and Teller,
yeah,
who's been,
yeah,
booked on the show. So it's a total surprise to them when you step out onto the stage.
How did you find them? They're interesting guys, no question about it.
Oh, definitely. Yeah. And Teller's a walking encyclopedia of magic. So I thought that's why I estimated my chances of fooling them at only about 30%. So I did the piece, and they conferred for about 10 minutes. You only see about a minute of it on the show. And then they said, we don't know Jack. They didn't even have a theory.
Wow.
Which I had never seen happen before.
Congratulations. That's a great accomplishment.
So now my trophy is on display at the Chicago Magic Lounge, along with the props I used to win the trophy.
Your new show is called Cabinet of Curiosities. It's every Wednesday at the Chicago Magic Lounge. We're going to talk about the show and the lounge. But this is, when I first met you, I don't know when I first met you, it had to be a long time.
It was a while back, yeah.
You were doing your show, The Magic Cabaret,
yeah,
at the Victory Gardens Theater. The Magic Cabaret, Bob Trio, from one of the, it was Wednesday nights, but it also had run for 8 years.
Wow.
That shows the popularity of it.
Yeah, it ran for 10 total.
10.
Yeah.
I caught it after 8 years.
Yeah, so. Yeah.
You know, let me just say, I love that we're on the radio and you're wearing all black, 90 degrees out. You have a black leather jacket, black shirt, black slacks, and
you got to live it.
Yeah, you got to live it.
Yeah, you got to live it. You're a magician 24/7. I discovered this about it. People who are non-magicians don't view magic as something you do. They view it as who you are.
Huh, interesting.
And so they expect you to be magic 24/7.
Wow.
So I'm always prepared to perform magic because the first question after somebody finds out that you're a magician
a
is
trick.
Going to be, can you show
do
me
something.
Some magic? Yeah.
Do something. Can you at all describe, without giving anything away, David Parr, the trick you did, not trick, the magic you did for Penn and Teller? That
on Fool Us?
Go ahead.
It involved two decks of cards and the host of the show, Allison Hannigan, and we each shuffled our decks of cards. They had different colored backs,
yeah,
and we shuffled our decks of cards, and we cut them, so they were all mixed up, and we each chose a card, and we exchanged decks, and at the end of it all, when we found the card that we had chosen in each of our decks, they turned out to match against all the odds.
Wow.
And you can see the clip of it on my website. It's davidparr.com. The clip from Fool Us is right there on the front page.
I'll be doing that after you make us disappear. If I find that I've landed somewhere with a computer, I'll do that. That's a huge coup for you, is it not, David? Or am I making too much of it?
Oh, yeah. No, I that was
that elevates
an amazing experience.
Wouldn't you think, Bob? I mean, if you could...
Yeah,
invent a trick that those guys couldn't figure out because they've seen it all, I would think.
Yeah, exactly. And lots of my friends have been on that show, and so I was really looking forward to it. The hardest part was after I won, I couldn't tell anyone. I was under a non-disclosure agreement because we recorded the show in March.
Right.
And it aired in August.
It's like The Bachelor or something.
So it was months where I couldn't tell anybody.
Agonizing. But you know what that's like? It's like winning Jeopardy and not being able to tell
someone. I know. It was funny. It was killing me.
You know, Tony Fitzpatrick is buddies with Penn Jillette. So.
That's another close Tony connection here.
Penn's
a big collector of Tony's work, too, which is not a bad thing to have. We're going to get some commercials. Then we're going to get some news. And David Parr is going to tell us all about... When did you start this show, David, the Cabin of Curiosities?
Well, the Magic Lounge opened in February, right at the end of February.
Okay, so it's relatively recent.
Yeah.
Oh, fantastic.
So the show's new.
And why the... You're not still doing the show at Victory Garden.
No, we wrapped up after 10 years.
A decade. That's a long time to do
it. It seemed like a good
juncture. It was fun,
though,
man. Last night I went to see it, there was a couple from Germany, a couple from the Beverly neighborhood, a couple people from Old Town. It was really a cool, cool thing. I will tell you that Dean Richards will join the Steve Cochran Show all morning on Monday to kick off the first show in the new studio. So tune in from 6 to 10. Here are some commercials. Then we'll get some news. And then Bob Chirito, David Parr, and I will close off the last after hours at the Tribune Tower. And David Parr will make us all disappear. Welcome back. The last minutes of... after hours in the tower, and I'm really happy to be spending them with David Parr, an old friend, a magician, one of the leading magicians, not just in the Midwest, but I think around the country. You can find him at davidparr.com. Bob Chirito, a new friend. This is the perfect thing. He's a freelance writer whose work you can see. You know, he writes for Reuters. He writes for the New York Times. He also runs a online magazine called the ChicagoAmbassador.com, where you can read a lot of his writing. Fellas, let's close this off in fine fashion. David, you moved your show, your long-running magic show, from Victory Gardens Theater after a 10-year run.
Well, we closed it. We wrapped it up after a decade.
Were you tired, or had you just done what you could do with that show?
It felt like we had brought it as far, it had evolved as much as it was going to.
Yeah.
And at the same time, I knew that the folks from the Chicago Magic Lounge were building their own space, a multi-million-dollar theater completely devoted to magic.
How did that happen? I know there have been, you know, modest. There hasn't been much in the papers, not enough for my taste about it. How did this all come to be?
I guess, well, basically they were renting space from in Uptown, and performing in a theater there, and they did so well just one night a week in that space, they expanded it and kept expanding it, and finally it reached a point where it was like, I think we can build our own space.
They spent a lot of money.
So they found investors, and they built it. And so they came to me and said, hey, we're going to have a stage. This thing's going to open next year. We'll have a stage. Pick a night of the week, and it's yours.
Wow.
And I said, well, I've had a title and a concept for a show in my back pocket for years.
Had you?
Yeah. And it's this show. And I just said, I just haven't had a place to try it.
So how different is the new show?
It's very different. It's in the Magic Cabaret, I had a partner, Joe Diamond, in the show. And in this, it's just me solo. And it's basically a collection of all the weird artifacts and strange stories I've been collecting over probably about 20, 25 years. And it's all pushed into this one show. So I have a cabinet on the stage, and there's weird artifacts in it.
Something like 30 or so different artifacts.
Yeah, and so I take them off the shelf, and I explain what they are, and there's usually a weird story or a spooky story that goes with them, and something magical happens, and then I put it back on the shelf. And there are points in the show when people from the audience can choose an artifact.
You know,
from
one
the
of the
cabinet.
Things about your previous show is it was very energetically audience participatory.
Oh yeah, well that's a hallmark of the Chicago style of magic, which you know that style, what we've come to call close-up magic. where there's no fourth wall between the artist and the audience. That was born here in Chicago, and it spread throughout the world. And so that style, where it's a collective experience and not just passive observers watching a show, is very much the Chicago style.
You talk about the Chicago style. Are there any magicians the general public would know that came out of that?
Oh, I think it's influenced all magicians. I mean, you name a magician and that person has been influenced by the Chicago style of magic.
See, I think one of the problems, and Bob brings up this point, is most of the magicians, except for Penn and Teller, who would be commonly known to people, are from that, you know, the big show. David Copperfield's going to make the Empire State Building go away, or David Blaine's going to get shot in the head or something. You know, it's that kind of TV showbiz magicians. And I'm not diminishing what they're able to do.
No, because that stuff ain't easy to do.
Oh, I can't.
It takes a lot of planning.
Yes, here, I have five elephants. It'd be like, well, maybe someone should get here really soon and tape us disappearing from this
studio. A lot of R&D
goes
into it. Yeah.
Oh, there's no question about it. And even, you know, magicians in Vegas who do those big, flashy kinds of shows. But I have been one to always prefer. A lot of magic I saw at Mr. C's Magic Lounge in Berwyn many, many years ago.
Close-up magic, yeah.
Run by Hugh Cosgrove. And I am fascinated with that because the experience is so intimate.
Exactly. And it feels like the magic is happening to you personally.
Yes.
And that makes it a very different experience from seeing an amazing thing happen 50 feet away. And so, I mean, that style influenced even people. When I was growing up, Doug Henning was the most famous magician in the world.
Yeah.
And
he would do, like, make an elephant disappear.
Right. He did these massive stage shows and television specials. But even in his live show, he would take moments to perform close-up magic.
Wow.
Where they'd bring in a video camera and there'd be a big screen and you could watch close-ups of his hands as he performed this close-up stuff.
And we talked about the sleight of hand a little bit off the air, and I asked, do you have a problem going to any kind of casino?
Bob's like, can you go to a casino?
Without being
immediately arrested. Is your picture on the wall there?
Yeah, no. As I explained, the techniques of cheating for gambling have some overlap with sleight of hand. But the trouble is, if you do anything impressive when you're cheating, you'll get caught.
You get your hands cut off.
Right, yeah. And your arms will get broken.
Yeah.
So, like Fast Eddie.
Fast Eddie
right,
Felsen,
in The Hustler.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Although there is some overlap, and there were some famous magicians who sought out underground cheaters, card sharps, to learn their techniques. But a lot of that stuff you could not apply to cheating at cards.
Fascinating.
Because it's too clearly sleight of hand. It's too impressive.
The other thing, we've got to take a break in a couple minutes, but the other thing that impresses me about what you're talking about, seeing your previous show at Victory Gardens, was there is a real, even in this, you know, hyper-technological age, there still is such, I think, even a greater taste for the kind of wonder. Not in, ooh, look what I have on my phone, but look what magic is.
Yes, I think so. I think we need the direct experience of mystery. It's an important thing to human beings. Mm. And magic is the art form that gives us that experience, that feeling of awe or wonder and not knowing, right?
Yeah. That's very, very important. We're going to take a short commercial break, then we're going to close off this edition, and we're going to disappear. The curse of the Billy Goat is finally over, and we've got Northside champions, but the Billy Goat lives on in the friendly taverns at Dot Chicago, and in a new place, too. At participating Jewel Osco stores, Mariano's, and Pete's Fresh Market in the Chicagoland area, you'll find the world-famous Billy Goat burgers frozen and ready to go home with you. That would make you the chef. So you start up the grill, but don't forget to add cheese, pickles, and onions to create your very own world champion cheeseburger. We'll be right back. The way to explore the Chicago Magic Lounge is to go there on Wednesday night to see my friend and Bob Chirito's new friend David Parr do his show, Cabinet of Curiosities, during which he will explain and grab on to 30 different weird things in a cabinet, and they lead to tricks and they lead to stories, because you are nothing else, a real historian about magic, and your passion for magic is intense. And this place, the Chicago Magic Lounge, I mean, your particular show takes place in a theater in the place, or?
Yes. Yeah. There are actually three different performance spaces
wow.
in there. The bar up front, which is open every day at 5, and the bartenders do magic, which is the style that
yeah,
you so
love.
Yeah,
the Mr. C's. Oh, my God. Yeah. The Shulians and yeah. Mr. C's. Yeah.
So, so you can see Chicago-style bar magic there. If you have a ticket to the show, you go through a second secret door into the main stage space, the Blackstone Cabaret.
How big is that?
That seats about 120.
Wow.
And cabaret-style seating, tiered yeah. seating with tables and so on. There's a menu. You can get a drink. You can get a bite to eat.
During the shows.
Sure.
So
yeah.
it's very much like yeah. the Up Comedy Club at Second City.
Or yep. And there's close-up magic table side for the first hour.
Wow.
And then my show goes on at 8:30, and I'm there till 9:30, and then you can go back out to the bar and watch some more magic.
It's amazing that
go ahead, Bob.
You know, that they have magic every night of the week, that there's such a demand.
I think people are hungry for that experience of mystery. I think, you know, and we said this to when we first pitched the idea of the Magic Cabaret
yeah.
to the theater company. We're like, people, there is an audience for this. They just have to know where to go to find it. And, I mean, and the proof is all around us. I mean,
well, I mean, you had a show run, albeit Wednesday nights, but your show ran for 10 years.
Yeah, and we deliberately picked an off night.
Yeah.
We said, you know, give us a night when normally there's not a show. Like,
yeah.
when's the theater dark? And they were like, okay. And we said, okay, we'll bring in, we'll give you an audience on that night.
Who have you been drawing to your new show, David Parr, Cabinet of Curiosities?
We get a lot of tourists coming through the lounge.
They'll come all the way up to 50.
Oh, absolutely. I think on TripAdvisor, it's now the number one nightlife activity.
Wow, good for you.
Yeah.
I know you're not surprised by it, but is there a little part of David Parr that is really is a little surprised by this? It is on the far north side of the city. It's not Russian cedar.
Yeah, no. What surprised me the most was how quickly this all happened. They
yeah.
broke ground on this on June 7th of last year.
Wow.
And when they said, we're aiming for a February opening, I thought.
Said, who opens anything in February?
Right. Yeah. And that time span just seemed like, okay, that's magical thinking. Right? I mean, all the bureaucratic nonsense you have to go through and all that, the licensure, the inspections, all that stuff. Really? You're going to... And sure enough, we opened in February.
There was no sleight of hand in that process?
Well, who knows?
Yeah, no political sleight of hand. No
machinations happen. You don't want to know.
You're happy with your show, and it obviously changes from Wednesday to Wednesday, depending on what people
choose
you to do. Tell me and Bob and the audience out there, tell us a couple of the things that people might choose.
Well, I have something here with me.
Well, of course you do. David, for those of you who are regular listeners to the show, know that he did a card trick and a coin trick on the radio. And if magic, and he makes magic work on the radio, which you would think is impossible. Well, he is holding in his hand a little black bag.
Yes, this is this little black bag. Hold out your hand. Inside that bag is one of the key pieces of evidence from the Salem witch trials. Do you have a guess as to what it might be?
Some red hair?
No.
That's a pretty good guess.
That is an interesting guess.
A gold tooth.
No. I'm going to show you what it is.
He's opening the bag.
Inside here is a little doll
made
from corn husk. Now, this was found in one of the suspected witches' houses. And they called it a poppet, which is an old-timey word for a simple handmade doll. Now, there are two legitimate reasons why this might have been in someone's home.
Okay.
First, these kinds of dolls were common children's toys. You know, simple to make.
Sure.
Doesn't matter if it gets ruined. You can make another one. Yep. Second, there was a sort of luck ritual that came from the British Isles, and that was that you kept a part of the harvest, in this case, corn husk. You made a little doll of it, and then you kept it in your house until the following year to ensure a good harvest the next year. Right. So it could have been a little luck charm. But no, the magistrates didn't go for either of those explanations. They insisted it was used for witchcraft and specifically for placing a curse on someone. Now, here's how that works. You imagine someone you don't like, for instance, my ninth grade algebra teacher, and then you point your finger at it like this. So, Rick, just point down at the doll, and then make a counterclockwise circle over the doll, counterclockwise like that, and you'll see eventually it'll start to take effect.
God, it's rising.
Tell them what's happening here.
The doll is rising onto its feet. Bob Gerito is looking
at his hand is not moving.
And nothing
now,
is moving.
Now, if you
want to
reverse the curse, you can reverse the circle.
I'm reversing the curse, and the little doll is going back down. That's fantastic. You are the greatest magician in the world. Didn't you think that was cool,
yeah,
Bob?
That's cool.
That's great, David. That's great. Wow. So during the course of a show, for the hour-long show, you will. How many of the curiosities will you probably want on average?
Probably about 10.
Wow.
Yeah. Yeah. And and like I said, I'm always swapping in new stuff.
Sure,
to try it out. I just put a new item in the cabinet last week, and so yeah, there'll be some surprises. So
you are really something. I know. You know, one of the things that really distinguishes you, and the thing too, Bob Chirito, about you too. I mean, you guys are both so passionate about what you do, and I know you have, and you both have to practice what you do because you're not going to get, you can only get better at it.
Well, it's been part of my life since I was seven years old.
7 years old,
so
I remember that.
I can't imagine my life without it.
Do you feel yourself, I know you do, Bob, growing as a writer, but do you feel yourself growing as a magician?
Oh, absolutely. I mean, there's always room to learn and grow, and that's, you know, an art has to stay organic and alive, or it dies.
I think that's what keeps people hungry. If there's no room for improvement, then you can just quit.
Right, right. No, it'll just ossify and die.
Yeah.
So, it has to stay alive.
I could not be more excited by this show. Again, you can go to ChicagoMagicLounge.com.
I do wonder one thing, David. You started off by saying how magic's a 24/7 passion or job. Is there a time when you just want to disappear though from it?
That's going to happen in 3 minutes.
Not really.
He's going to make us disappear
from
the studio.
Because it's been part of my life since I was seven, so I'm always thinking about it. You know, I joke with some of my friends who are not magicians because they say, "What, you're going to turn this into a magic trick, right?" Because that's how I think.
Yeah.
Now.
Wow. It is great. We got to take a little commercial break. Then you will get the news, and then David will make us all disappear in about 3 minutes.
Cool.
Well, thanks so much for listening to the final After Hours broadcast from the Tribune Tower. Because you will never see him again, I want to thank Aubrey Mumpower, the great engineer. Ben Anderson, who hasn't been a producer long here, and he will be vanishing into the thin air. Bob Chirito, one of Chicago's most prolific and talented freelance writers. David Parr, one of the great magicians on the planet. Me, Rick Kogan. You can win a 2018 Chevy Silverado. For details, you just listen to Steve Cochran at 720 on 720 WGN. If you're a smart speaker user, just say play WGN radio and tune in. The news, which is coming up in 1 second with Roger Badish, is brought to you by RoadAmerica.com. David Parr, make us all disappear.
Concentrate, and abracadabra.
Poof.